right, welcome back to the Mobility Podcast, recording live from the Automated Vehicle Symposium 2019 here in Orlando, Florida. We've been here all week and we'll continue to be here. We've got an all-star lineup of guests, so make sure to subscribe and check back daily for all the great episodes to come. There's going to be several. So today we've got another great guest, and our guest today is Dr. David Yang, the Executive Director of the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety. He oversees the day-to-day operations of this nonprofit research and education organization. Previously, he was with the U.S. DOT, Federal Highway Administration, and prior to joining FHWA, David worked in private consulting firms and at DOT's Volpe National Transportation Systems Center. David, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great honor to be among a lot of well-known guests who are attending this conference, so I'm very delighted to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, no, this has been a great conference, and so we're really excited to dig in. So why don't we start at the top level? You know, a lot of folks know AAA. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. So definitely, a lot of people, like you mentioned, they know the American Automobile Association. AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, we are, you can kind of view us as the research and research arm for AAA. So AAA Foundation was established in 1947. What happened was, the story I was told is that back then there was a gentleman, a AAA club member in New York. He, back in 1940, he continued to see the traffic fatality to increase. So he donated $50,000 back in 1940 and said, we need to establish independent research foundation. Basically focus on doing research so we can improve traffic safety. That's the genesis of this organization. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Most of our, majority of our foundation come from AAA clubs throughout the United States, as well as the Canadian Automobile Association. We do receive independent research, and we have been a four-star rated nonprofit organization because the majority of our work go into traffic safety research and education.
That's fascinating. And so now we're here at the Automated Vehicle Symposium. Talk to us about how has the foundation approached research for automated vehicles, but also for ADAS systems.
Sure.
Of the various levels.
Yeah, so it was really interesting. I think that AAA, because the name AAA is a well-recognized name within the United States, so and has, I believe they are approaching approximately 60 million members in the U.S. So a lot of people will come to AAA member and as well as non-member, kind of curious about what's the future of vehicle technology look like. So many of the club has been getting inquiry from people about, what's the difference between a for example a forward collision warning system and emergency and automated emergency brake. And we at AAA Foundation, we are at the forefront kind of doing research and to kind of make sure that any information we provide to the AAA club, and basically in the sense they provide to the member, can be accurate information so that the proper information about certain technology, their functionality, their limitation can be conveyed correctly, so there won't be any, hopefully, misuse of the technology. So in our work, during the past several years, one of the things we've done is we have partnered with several academic institutes as well as research organizations looking into the demand. This is both visual and cognitive demand that can cause driver if a system, for example, an in-vehicle information system is designed improperly. This is a work that we have done with University of Utah. That's on-road testing. And then based on that piece of research, we provide a set of recommendations to the auto manufacturer. And we are very glad that some of the auto manufacturer actually took our recommendation very seriously. Mm-hmm. And they came back and they said, we're going to really improve our design based on your research. So for me, that's always a big plus, that as an independent nonprofit organization, we are doing research for the consumer's interest. And then we realized that, you know, basically after we done that, some of the OEM who's responsible for some of the design, they said, you know, we agree with you. We're going to improve our design to protect the consumer. So that's really good. Mm-hmm. And also during the past few 2 years, actually, we have awarded several contracts looking into drivers' perception toward traffic safety, as well as issue about their understanding related to vehicle automation and so forth. So we have right now we have approximately 6 active projects looking into various aspects, try to understand drivers' acceptance, mm-hmm. drivers' perception, drivers' understanding and safety benefit of ADAS as well as vehicle automation.
And so this is leading to, I mean, helping to get an understanding of where people are, but also when we're looking at where the technology is going, mm-hmm. what can we do to better educate the public about ADAS and eventually autonomous vehicles?
Yeah, I think for us at AAA is, you know, one thing we continue to advocate from AAA Foundation based on our research is we need to package the information so they are simple and clear to understand. Because, you know, right now what we find is even people who are dealing with vehicle automation and vehicle technology on a regular basis, sometimes we get confused about what can certain technology do and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the research we have done in partnership with University of Iowa last year that was published, that's available on our website, is we done survey. This is a national survey. And this survey was administered to people who own vehicle that has 2 or 3 ADAS system. Mm-hmm. And so we're not talking about people who just, you know, who just purchase a vehicle. These are people, driver who have been driven these vehicle for a year or two.
Okay.
And we were surprised to find there's a lot of misunderstanding. For example, we had people that reported that they thought they have automatic emergency brake. Mm-hmm. Turned out they don't have that because
they have the alert,
yeah,
but not the actual active.
Yeah, brake. Not only that, but they have, you know, we have some driver. They thought, wow, you know, I have automatic emergency brake. So in that last second, that critical moment, it can help me to prevent crash. But turned out all they have is adaptive cruise control. That is an issue because what we find is that when you have a misunderstanding about the capability, you form a incorrect mental model about what your vehicle can do, mm-hmm. and then when that expectation when in a critical moment when that expectation is not met, then you're going to be in trouble. Mm-hmm. We have driver who believe that blind spot warning because the blind spot warning we see behavior that they omit. You know, since the blind spot warning system is in place, they don't need to look anymore when they change lane.
Oh my God!
And one of the things that we'll lead into is that, you know, we ask people, can you tell me the limitation about blind spot warning? And only about 20% people correctly answer the right capability of blind spot warning.
So what is that?
So really, I think one of the limitations on blind spot warning is that when other vehicle are passing your vehicle at a very high speed, mm-hmm. blind spot warning may not pick up that vehicle.
Huh. I've noticed that before where I'll see a car fly by, and by the time they're actually almost passed, and then it flicks on.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So that is the limitation. So basically what we're studying right now is that if you have, you know, certain consumer based on that study is that they tend to rely on that technology, and that technology, they use that technology in replace for good driving practices. Now, maybe most of the time they can get away with it, but you know, all you take is one mistake. And right. then you will, mm-hmm. you could get into crashes. So basically what we're trying to do is working in collaboration with AAA National Office as well as AAA Club around the United States as well as CAA is that after we finish the research, we gave the information to them. They help us to translate and package the research. So make sure that we have a fact sheet available on our website. And then basically we will get this information to the national media outlet. And what we are very encouraged is right now, our research is not only being used by people within the United States, but international community has been also being very, very, being kind of looking to our work. And I think that, to me, that's a very encouraging sign that you know, our research is being used by others, and hopefully that will translate into really an improvement on how the system can be used properly and translate into improving in traffic safety.
Yeah. And so what's the best way to really inform consumers of what those limitations are? Is it at the dealership? Is it
informing the media first so that the media isn't promulgating falsehood?
Yeah, that's actually a research question, a research gap we have identified. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. So last 2 years, we have this forum that was organized by AAA Foundation. And in that forum, really, the whole focus is, you know, basically asking the fundamental question is, what is the impact of vehicle technology and automation on users? So, and you know, education and training piece still identified as one of the research need. I think really what we have identified is that education is not a one-time thing. So dealership is one of the places I think that certain expert has identified as a place to start. But education, as we all know, is that you need to continue kind of reinforced learning. So after you drive a car for a while, you know, there's certain functionality, you get to know the car a little bit better. Mm-hmm. You need to continue that constant education reminder. So for me, is what I would imagine in a perfect world in the future, is that you start when the moment when the vehicle is handed over to the new owner, there'll be a process where from the dealership all the way to various entity to, you know, you learn about the functionality, the limitation, the capability, and then there'll be continued reinforcement throughout the driving life of that vehicle, that so driver can be reminded, this is what you can do, this is what you cannot do. And hopefully this will really improve or reduce the number of misuse and improve really the intended function. We done a study, in-house study last year, what we calculated is that if all the ADAS system can be used in the right way, properly, it really has potential to significantly improve traffic safety. We really believe that. But however, drivers still need to be involved.
And so I don't mean to be cheeky, but how do we actually get people to care? I mean, no one really wants to watch an instructional safety video, right?
Yeah. And particularly at the point of purchase, where you've just spent God knows how long at the dealership,
right, you're just haggled for 2 hours.
Yeah, 57 pages, and just want to get out of there.
Exactly.
I mean, you do have infotainment centers in the vehicles. Is it something where it's a kind of pop-up ad that is, you know, every 6 months reminding you? Or?
You know, that's a good question. Actually, Pete, what you have just said is something that quite a few people has pointed out, is that, you know, after, especially here in the United States, right, you spend half a day kind of haggling.
It's terrible.
And the last thing you want to do is sit through for another 2 hours to learn about the driving system.
And just from a memory recall, I'm worn out mentally after this process.
Yeah. So certain thing people has proposed is like saying that some dealership could potentially kind of saying that, okay, we're gonna offer, you have these system required, but we're gonna kind of limit these function, and then until you come back in a day later, you know, or you know, a week later, to kind of learn about these system properly before we kind of fully activate all these systems. I knew a colleague, he has shared this experience with me, that after he spent a long time kind of purchased a vehicle, and then he was driving home, and the whole time he felt that, because he knew that there's certain ADAS system in the car, so he was trying to figure out on the drive home about these functionality, and he felt that was probably one of the most dangerous drive he had.
Yeah.
Because he was distracted all the time trying to figure out, okay, what's that beep sound, how do I activate this? And but I think another aspect, you know, kind of great, kind of going back to your question about how can we kind of sustain that, I think you know, we are actually doing research right now with a company called Westat that's based in Maryland, kind of looking into different training method. For example, the instruction manual, a kind of video, instruction video. And what we are doing, not giving too much away from that research, because still active research, is we purchased a level 2 vehicle from a manufacturer, and they disguised the vehicle. So basically all the subject, and this is on-road testing, all the subject is going to go through driving on certain section for about 15 miles in Maryland. And what we are doing is we are providing three type of instruction format, and also the level of detail. So one is kind of, it's more kind of encouraging, kind of more positive reinforcement. The other one is more kind of restrictive. And what we want to learn is, out of all these method and format, which one is the most effective of kind of getting driver to understand and follow the instruction. And one thing that's going to be really neat about this particular study is that the way they set up this study is they're going to drive on this route, like mentioned, about 15 mile in Maryland. And at certain point, all the functionality of the vehicle, you know, all those level 2 vehicle will be lost because it's not mapped into it. And then what we want to see is that when that happened, when those functionality went away, how did driver react to it?
Are they going to be notified? Or?
Well, we won't tell them that, but
and it'll say this: you've lost it. Please take control. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. It's going to be basically the car will provide an indication. But again, this is going to be one of the things we are learning about. As I mentioned, I guess the technical term I used earlier is how mental model is after a subject driven for a number of miles now. He or she has that mental model. Oh, well, this system can provide me lane departure warning, blind spot warning, and so forth. Now, so there's icon in the car that will clearly indicate whether or not these functionality are on. So it's going to be some point toward the end of that drive, all these icons are going to go away. So while the driver still have that perception that, oh, I'm still on. But obviously, you know, to do this kind of experiment, we want to make sure all the subjects are safe and so forth. So there's always going to be a researcher that's in the car. And then this is a very low volume road within Maryland. So and that report should be available in 2020. So again, these are information as well, learning about it. We hopefully can come up with countermeasure and strategy to better inform and really better instruct the future driver on how to handle these type of system.
This is great. I'm really looking forward to reading the report.
And you know, you talked about the kind of your first experience, lots of beeping going on. Or
right.
Have you guys looked into, from that, are there numbers on the how many consumers who have this technology that we know can save lives if use it, that because there's beeping and they don't really get it and they shut it off? And so the cars who have the technology but they've chosen to not activate it?
Yeah, we don't have any statistic, but we definitely hear about it. I mean, I got involved with looking into these vehicle technology since the early 2000s when I was working for USDOT's Volpe Center. And what happened is, I can tell you from my personal experience driving those back then, each of those vehicles that equipped with these systems is about $500,000 per vehicle. So I was driving one of these test vehicles in Boston, Massachusetts, and there's so many false alarms that basically at the end of the drive, I had that very similar reaction. And what we found from that study as well is that most of the driver, after probably kind of, you know, if you use the rule of baseball, right, three strike, you know, you kind of go, you know what, I'm not going to pay attention because it's providing me incorrect information. So I don't have that number, but what we do have is that we know that a lot of OEM realizes that, so we're designing all these vehicle safety technology, but when the consumer decided it's not helping them, decided to turn it off, you lose that safety benefit. So I think that is still an area we need to continue to work on. But one thing I also want to know is that kind of going back to another work we are kind of looking into, this is a work in conjunction with University of Iowa as well as University of Massachusetts, is looking into, well, again, going back to this mental model, is what, you know, you have certain expectation. So For example, if you are driving your regular vehicle used on a regular basis to commute, that has blind spot warning, that has a forward collision warning, and then all of a sudden one day you come to Orlando, Florida for the automated vehicle symposium, and you got into a rental vehicle. Mm-hmm. We have people that has reported that even though
rear-ending someone because you expected
I mean, we have people reported that they would. I had this another person shared this personal experience where he was driving a rental vehicle that doesn't have blind spot warning. Mm-hmm. So as he was changing lane, he was looking at the lane next over, and he didn't see any car. It just so happened there was a car that was on his blind spot. Wow. So that last second, because in his mental model, mm-hmm. is when there's a car, I look, I didn't see anything, and then my blind spot warning system will tell me
that
about it.
That covers the blind spot. Yeah.
So he said that last split second, the driver honking, and he realized, oh. And then he went back to his lane.
The old-fashioned blind spot warnings.
Exactly. So I think again, you know, I think coming back is that all these technology we are working on, they are really designed to improve safety. But if there's improper use, there's misuse, there's a misunderstanding, that can actually cause more harm than improve safety. I think that's one thing that consumer need to really remember that. And also, you know, for people like us who are in this space working on this, need to remember that.
And it's also really damaging. I mean, if someone turns off their ADAS system once, they're probably just going to leave it.
Yeah, once it's
off.
And
that's the lifetime of their car, probably.
Yeah.
And there goes 11 years until they get
exactly.
The
yeah, you know, it's interesting. We also, we do a lot of work in another space, we do a lot of work on is issue about older driver. Mm-hmm. So recently we had a research brief published about older drivers' interaction with technology. And what we has found is that it actually takes older driver much longer time to adapt, to learn to use these technology. And many of these older drivers feel uncomfortable after a while because they just don't know mm-hmm. that what that beep means. And actually that, you know, when you have alert, many of the old driver, they feel nervous about it.
It's jarring.
Yeah,
which is the point.
Yeah, exactly.
But if there's too much and the false alarms.
So again, it's really interesting. We see like generation, right? I mean, you know, a younger driver, they are more kind of tech savvy, and so for them, you know, these technology are basically well designed. So our research basically what our recommendation is that when you are designing these vehicle technology, you really need to look at these vulnerable group mm-hmm. that are using the vehicle. Just because someone that's in their 30 can use it well, doesn't mean someone in their 70 can adapt to that technology. So we need to really design for these cases where we consider all driving population that could be using.
Okay, is that also that same concept or that same principle, should that be applied to the educational side of it, of the you know, either the manner or the specifics of how you're teaching the use of the technology? Is there a lesson for the 30-year-old and then another system of explaining this to someone who's 70? Here's what your technology is and how you use it.
Right. Yeah, I believe in the future, if for a education system to be effective on how to kind of teaching different driver on how to use these technology, it needs to be customized. Mm-hmm. You know, based on the exposure to technology and so forth. I think you are right on the right track. But again, I can't say anything conclusive mm-hmm. yet because we are still doing research in that area.
And on the broader topic, so ignoring the technology side of it, you know, the foundation does a lot of work on aging driving, you mm-hmm. know, aging drivers. It's a very important issue. It's also an issue where you have a strong constituency within AAA mm-hmm. of older drivers. Talk to us about what is the state of the field and major findings on just that driving and what it's going to mean, kind of now and in the next few years.
Yeah, so definitely. So Pete, the study you are referring to, basically, it's a project. It's we are collecting what we call longitudinal data. So what we are actually doing is we are following driver basically in the range of between 65 to 78 years old. And we are collecting data from close to 3,000 drivers at five different data collection sites. And the name of this project is called Longitudinal Research on Aging Driver, or the acronym is LONGRO. And by the end of this study, this is going to be the largest database on older driver. And really, the simple question we're asking is this: is what is the impact of aging on driving safety? So I'll volunteer basically at these five different locations in San Diego, Denver, Maryland, New York, as well as Michigan. Basically, we are trying to track and understand, and we already have a number of probably more than close to 20 research briefs published on this subject about, you know, how is their behavior, you know, are there any behavior change? And what we found is that older drivers, as they are aging, they begin to adjust their driving behavior. For example, many older drivers avoid driving at nighttime because of sight distance issue. Right. Many drivers avoid driving, making left turn because the reaction time issue. So
they kind of create their own ODD.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of the AV progression, where you're slowly expanding the ODD. There's a self-selection in.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then we also find that, you know, many older drivers lay out under many different type of prescription, and some of these prescription could impact the driving capability as well. So what we are hoping is really in the future, when we finish this study, we can, you know, provide informative policy and education work, so that we can, when, you know, in the future, we can see what are certain things that older driver needs, and we can provide advice and so forth, and hopefully some state legislation can be passed to help these older drivers as they are aging and so forth.
Yeah, the politics gets very tricky in there.
Definitely.
I'd prefer to be on the research side.
Exactly. and that's why we hand out our research result to AAA, because they have experts and who work in government affairs.
Yeah, I was going to say, let Jill handle that.
Exactly.
It's crucial to have the real data to know,
right.
here, you know, because I've always seen they have that chart of, you know, the by age of, you know, either the propensity or whatever of a fatal crash,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of it's almost a U curve,
mm-hmm.
or almost like a Nike swoosh kind of,
right.
Where it starts high when you're younger.
Correct.
Because you're driving like, you know, a young
like
kid,
a 16-year-old,
right. And then it goes down, and then but then when you hit. It's kind of in the mid 70s,
mm-hmm.
and it just absolutely spikes.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Now I want to make sure that, you know, to kind of clarify, is that not every older driver is driving the same. We see cases in our subject,
mm-hmm.
that they are more advanced in their age, but they are perfectly fine. But I think in general, yes.
I think if you polled them, though,
right, yeah.
there would be a much higher percentage of drivers that think they are that exception.
Of course, yeah. I think many drivers has a tendency to kind of overestimate their capability.
Yeah. But the average driver thinks they are better than the average driver.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we're doing all these research, hopefully, you know, really, really come up with a good strategy to kind of, I mean, you know, you mentioned, Pete, about the teen driver on the other side of the curve. Is we are also doing research right now. We have done some research during the past few years with University of Massachusetts, WestEd again, and right now at University of Iowa, kind of looking to kind of, you know, how can we incorporate better training to train younger drivers? Because, you know, compared to older drivers, many teen drivers, what they got into is their inexperience. Mm-hmm. So when there's a hazard, upcoming, they don't know that's a hazard because they don't have that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then that last second, when they need to react, it's too late. So we are actually right now we are evaluating two highly potential tool that can help teen driver to hopefully be able to kind of identify potential hazard and find way to mitigate and avoid those potential crashes. And we're hoping that after we finish those projects, they can be incorporated to some of the driver training programs throughout the United States. So teen driver will kind of learn these in a simulated environment before they actually encounter these in the real world.
And what kind of situations are these? Is this maybe a sudden backup on a highway, being able to recognize, you know, three cars ahead of you?
So one of the things is, for example, in the tour driving, a lot of time when you go into certain street and so forth, the sight distance may not be good. Mm-hmm. So when you have another vehicle all of a sudden turn out, what right. would you do? How would you kind of anticipate that?
Basic mm-hmm. defensive driving.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And but I think that many of the defensive driving that's available right now is, you know, it's a bit outdated. I think right now, you know, since the simulation technology using virtual reality is become much more available. Yeah.
yeah.
We want to be able to kind of offer and incorporate and also really kind of help the teen driver to build a good mental model about what safe driving is. So, yeah.
Well, just one last thing. The kind of flip side on the going back to the tech,
mm-hmm.
is there data or just anecdotal, I'm assuming, of are younger drivers overly confident in some of these technologies? That, you know, you hear it a lot, particularly with Tesla,
mm-hmm.
Of the folks who basically, this thing's driving itself. I'm sitting in, I'm going to, you know, be funny and sit in the passenger seat, or I'm just openly reading my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that more prevalent on the younger end, or
yeah.
or is that not been kind of documented yet?
We haven't had any astrophysics that kind of shows that, but we do see that a number of times that whether their age or not, but there's a tendency that certain driving population, when they have vehicle that has certain features, certain new technology, they felt, you know, there's a sense of kind of false safety, mm-hmm. a kind of assurance that, oh well, since I have this, then I don't need to worry about. You know, I think right now consistently is the message also throughout this conference is the current technology is out there to assist you. You mm-hmm. as a driver are still responsible to right. do the driving. You need to be on, you need to be alert, you need to pay attention. Otherwise, that moment when that alert sounds, you will not know what's going on.
Right.
And then before you know it, you'll be in a crash. So,
and what's tough there is that a lot of the selling point of the technology is not just the safety side, but it's the convenience side.
Right.
It's, if I've got to be fully active in all of this, then what's the point?
Yeah.
Right. You know.
And I think Pete, I think that's a gap. I think between the industry, between the research institute, between the government,
and the marketing department,
we really need to close those gaps, because mm-hmm. right now, you know, we have people that has reached out to AAA in the past and said, where can they purchase a self-driving car? Okay. So there's a lot of misunderstanding mm-hmm. and misconception.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, certain well-known people has been, I don't want to name any name, but there's certain well-known people has been said, oh, you can, when you are getting in the car, you can sleep, you can read a book.
Right. Yeah.
That is a great vision to have, but we are still working on that vision.
Yeah. And does that go into the education side? Is perhaps the dealership sales guy not the best educator if his main priority in his day job and where his paycheck comes from is getting you to buy this more expensive tech enabled thing?
Yeah.
Does that create a natural incentive to oversell and the yeah. technology?
Yeah, what we found, and I think, you know, that could be the case, and that's why, you know, like right now there's an organization, there's a consortium called the PAVE, Partner yeah. for mm-hmm. Automated Vehicle Education. I think the reason there's these type of entity that got created is because we all see as a community, we really need to work together. Many of the basically at dealership, what we found is that the car salesman do not have the proper knowledge to kind of be able to explain to you mm-hmm. all the functionality and so forth. So is that an area we need to put a lot of emphasis on? Is that if you sell this, you need to, for example, be certified
right.
to kind of know and kind of say, this is, you know, this technology can do the following, mm-hmm. but these are the limitations. I think mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of research gap that within the United States, we are still in a lot of conversation about. I think mm-hmm. for me is really just, I think we have a great future, but we need to really approach it by keeping the consumer safety in mind. Otherwise, people, you know, just like some of the technology, some of the consumer decides to turn off. You know, we're putting so much resources. We mm-hmm. want people to use it and benefit from it. Mm-hmm. But if we don't deploy them carefully and you know, correctly, people are going to be turned off and dismiss those.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, this has been fascinating. Where can folks go to find your work online?
Yeah. So basically, if you do a Google, basically just do AAA Foundation, mm-hmm. you'll be able to find us. And we are excited to be part of this this community to really do the right research and hopefully to help to protect consumer interest. And we're excited, and hopefully in the years to come, we can continue to make a contribution to
Great.
This area.
Thank you. You're doing very important work, and
thank you.
We really appreciate this. Pete, where can we find you online?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at SharedMobilityS.
And I'm at AV Gregar. Follow the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast and find us at mobilitypodcast.com. Thanks again, David.
Thank you. Thank you.